From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, Elvis Presley, Princess Diana, and FDR. Their strange deaths. Here's what's happening. This was an accident, but actor Alec Baldwin fatally shot a movie crew member with a prop firearm during a film shoot in New Mexico. The shooting also injured the film's director, according to the sheriff's office. Baldwin was filming a scene for the movie Rust when the prop gun went off. Why they had real ammunition in there is beyond me. I assume they did. What a horrible accident there. He was in tears. The apparent human remains that authorities found at a Florida park most likely belonged to Brian Laundrie. He has been identified as the missing man whose fiancée, Gabby Petito, was found murdered last month. Investigators also found a backpack and notebook belonging to the 23-year-old. They identified him through his dental records. No word yet on how he died. A panel of advisors to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are considering several recommendations for rollout of COVID-19 vaccine boosters from Moderna and Johnson & Johnson, expected to pave the way for additional shots for millions of Americans. As the nation rebounds from a surge of the Delta variant, questions swirl over the future of new coronavirus variants and the effectiveness of vaccines against them. As long as the virus that caused the COVID-19 pandemic continues to infect people, new variants, they say, will continue to emerge. The World Health Organization is listing ivermectin as an essential medicine because it can treat life-threatening diseases, including hookworm infections and river blindness. But what about COVID-19? That was one of the things we've assigned Christian Wild to, myheartbook.com. Christian, what have you uncovered on this thing?
Well, I find a lot of controversy. Japan calls it a miracle drug. India suddenly says no. And, you know, you've mentioned the other day that people were overdosing on it. Well, some people can overdose on Snickers bars if you take too much. And some of these people are taking enough of ivermectin that they would be prescribing for a 2,000-pound draft horse.
That's right. Way too much, and they're overdosing. They're getting
overdosing.
Sick. They're dying.
But if we want to talk about monoclonal antibodies, George, I think I've got some good information.
What do you got? And what are they, by the way?
Well, okay, they are a man-made ability to force our bodies to produce more antibodies to fight off not just COVID, but any diseases. It's all a matter of having a strong immune system. Okay, George, there's a new player in the treatment of COVID that we as a nation just may have overlooked. It's not a substitute for vaccination, but it is a major addition and reliever of hospital overload administered within 10 days of somebody becoming positive for COVID. Okay, let's go back 1 year ago, October 2nd, 2020. Two of the most visible people on the planet were both diagnosed positive for COVID-19. The president was admitted to Walter Reed Hospital to be attended by a group of world-class leading physicians who decided to treat him with an experimental monoclonal antibody treatment. Now, here's what makes this case so incredibly important, George. If you are like me, you might have wondered why we had not heard more about this treatment from Regeneron that is now a year later being approved and being administered with great results throughout Florida. Hospital admittance in Florida has dropped 80%.
Wow, that's huge.
The country of India has been ravaged by COVID, and medical experts there have said the treatment is becoming the game changer for the desperate people of India. These are monoclonal antibodies, and the FDA has now authorized this treatment. So here's the miracle, George. Here's the miracle. The president was hospitalized and found positive on October 2nd, 2020. And just 3 days later, on October 5th, He is released completely free of COVID-19, as is the First Lady in D.C., set free from her disease as well. Is that incredible? In 3 days, completely free of COVID-19. Now, the University of Alabama professor M.D. Turner Overton said that the infusion is incredibly effective if given early, within 10 days of a positive diagnosis, like we just said. But people still need to be vaccinated to receive the strongest long-term protection. The recommendation from the World Health Organization is that this monoclonal antibody combo is incredibly effective.
And how do they give it to you? Do you?
It's an injection.
It's an injection as well. And Christian's website, myheartbook.com. The myth that boys don't cry just got another nail in its coffin. You may be surprised by the results of a new survey that showed that men tend to cry more often than women. Are the 21st century men more sensitive than generations past? According to the poll of 2,000 Americans, men cry on the average about 4 times a month. Women, on the other hand, weep about 3 times in a given month. That's a 48 times a year for men and only 36 for women. How about that? Former President Donald Trump has announced a deal that would enable him to regain a social media presence after he was kicked off Twitter and Facebook platforms. The former president's new enterprise will be in operation by the first quarter of next year, according to a press release from the Trump Media and Technology Group. It says it plans to start a social media company called Truth Social. The move, if all goes according to plan, would occur well ahead of the 2022 midterm elections. South Korea has launched its first homegrown rocket, stepping up the country's ambitious program for space. And here's Kevin Randall talking about our weekly UFO reports. He's a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel who served in Vietnam and also an intelligence officer in Iraq. Kevin, what do you have for us this week, my friend?
Well, good evening, George.
Hi there.
As I'm sure you remember, the June 25th ridiculous report on the UAPs provided no analysis, no real investigation, and we were told that 143 of the 144 reports were unidentified. We don't know how many sightings were involved, just how many reports had been made. There could have been multiple reports for each of the sightings. We were told there'd be a follow-up in 90 days. Well, that hasn't happened, as near as I can tell.
Not yet.
What I did find was that Representative Ruben Gallego had introduced and pushed legislation that would require a permanent office working under the Secretary of Defense to, I want to say, investigate. But what was really suggested was the timely and consistent reporting of what we now call UAPs, but are really just flying saucers. There seems to be no mechanism for investigation, and if not, then what's the point, really? I also noticed that the Secretary of the Air Force, Frank Kendall, said that he didn't think the UAPs were a serious enough threat to demand his attention. And at the opposite end, Deputy Defense Secretary Kathleen Hicks ordered the various military branches and various civilian organizations under the DOD to formalize a mission to provide a plan to gather data. This seems to underscore the power of the deep state to divide us. Gathering data is an intelligence function, but is also investigation and analysis that is part of that function, and that seems to be missing from all the discussion. Gathering data and sticking it in a file cabinet or feeding it into a database doesn't accomplish much. And I have a longer analysis about all this on my blog. And to show what I mean, I have a report from Newport Beach, California. The witness said that he, along with his two children, stepped outside when he noticed a bright, metallic-looking object in the sky on September 13th of this year. He said that it was just one object that seemed to be hovering. There was no sound associated with it. After watching it for a few seconds, the witness began filming. The UFO appeared to change shape and spin, or maybe turn and flash. None of the witnesses were able to identify the object, saying that it wasn't a plane, a helicopter, a drone, or a balloon. The object drifted to the east, and they lost sight of it. Now, I have a link to that video on my blog as well. So what I've done is collect data. Now what? Looking at it, the object does not resolve itself into a conventional object. The motion of the object is erratic. But that is probably the fact the camera was handheld rather than mounted on a tripod or some other solid surface. There is very little detail visible in the video, and there's no foreground detail. We have a bright object on a bright blue background. It is possible the flashing is a reflection of the sun, and that suggests something about the surface of the UFO. Investigation would require a more in-depth interrogation of the witnesses and an on-site investigation to determine that there is a that there isn't a terrestrial explanation for the sighting. Without a follow-up, there's a gap in our knowledge. Here's an opportunity for additional work with two chains of evidence, the eyewitnesses and the video. Without the follow-up, this is basically unidentified, but it does nothing to increase our knowledge. Such follow-up is not called for in the new proposal, which means we would learn nothing new even after the creation of this official collection center. And that's what I have for this week, George.
Great, Kev. We'll talk to you next Friday on Ghost to Ghost Night. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you. Kevin Randall. Well, NASA wants to send astronauts to Mars in the 2030s. Elon Musk wants us to go by 2026. In a moment, Jason Martell joins us to speculate on what we could find when we get to the Red Planet. Next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Jason Martell back with us. Jason is an entrepreneur, co-founder of numerous successful tech companies. He's also an acclaimed researcher and lecturer in ancient civilizations and technologies as well. Tonight we're going to talk about Mars with him. Jason, welcome back, my friend. How's everything?
Hi, George. Great to be on the show. It's a pleasure to speak with you as always.
Always good to talk with you. You open up our minds, Jason, every time you're on. I love it.
It's always a stimulating talk to, you know, speak to you, and we always have fun topics, and tonight is definitely within the bounds of awesomeness. Mars 2026, people might not believe that that's even possible, but it's within our target sights to make it happen.
Elon Musk thinks we will. NASA wants to go in the 2030s. I think Musk is going to get there before NASA.
Well, if anyone's been paying attention, George, you know, Elon Musk and SpaceX have really done some incredible work. They just launched the most esoteric mission into space at the highest altitude, the Inspiration 4 crew led by Jared Isaacman. You know, these are just incredible feats that are being done by SpaceX. So it really kind of raised my eyebrows in realizing that not only within our lifetime, but within just a few years, we might have the opportunity to solve some of the deepest questions that this show and others like Ancient Aliens have been scratching our heads and trying to use the best tools of science available to figure out, are we alone and have there been past civilizations? That question might be finally answered when we arrive on Mars.
Do you think we will pinpoint Cydonia, where the face is?
Well, I don't think initially that, you know, they're going to land. Obviously, a SpaceX mission will be more towards long-term settlement, and so they're going to look for places where there's, you know, minerals and water. But what's really interesting, George, is that, you know, we've been watching this topic for a long, long time. And so anyone that, you know, eventually goes to Mars, I think there's just some more logical human things that they're going to want to do. If you land on Earth, for instance, you know, you establish your home base by waterfront property. Everybody loves to live near the water, right? No matter who you are, it's wonderful to live near the water, even for resource reasons, you know, having access to water.
Except if you're like me, born in the Midwest, I'm stuck.
Well, we still need it, though. And so even on Mars, what we see is that this area of Cydonia is built right on an ancient shoreline. And so I think what's going to happen is as we start to map out the areas of Mars and where settlements could be places to set up, we're going to very quickly find that Cydonia and the face, these are all monuments built as an ancient site that was clearly, you know, either artificial in nature, built by us, or from some past civilization.
Will they tell us these things, Jason, or will they hide them from us?
You know, that's the larger topic here too, George, with like disclosure and such. Things seem to be changing in that the layer of space for our lens has always just been through NASA, right? And then over the last few years, we've had ESA, the European Space Agency, and now China and other agencies are, you know, making a presence on Mars. So it's no longer just the lens of NASA. They've been very withholding with the evidence. We've seen all the way since Pathfinder, Mars Global Surveyor, you know, the excellent work of Richard Hoagland, even before all that, you know, looking at the Voyager craft,
sure,
and the landings. I mean, the evidence is there. So I think what's going to happen now is that we're not sending NASA, we're not sending the DOD or the NSA with defense packages to Mars. I'm sure we are, but with the SpaceX missions, these are going to be civilian-based. The Inspiration 4 that we just sent into orbit and back, there wasn't one NASA astronaut or personnel attached to that. It was all SpaceX. I think it's going to be an interesting game when we have civilians like you or I on Mars, you know, with our tools. What are we going to do? What are we going to find? I think that's just a different scenario than what we've ever had before.
From Earth to Mars, Jason, how long's the trip? One way.
Well, it's about 6 months to get there, and you know, that technology might.
And that's when Mars is at its closest ebb to us, right?
From what I understand, yes. And you know, what's really the fascinating part of all this is just if anyone's been paying attention to what has been happening with SpaceX and their reusable rockets and being able to land them. You know, hats off to Elon Musk, because there really does seem to be the gates, the doors, if you will, are opening to space for civilians. And within before, you know, 2026, maybe 2023, 2024, we're looking at sending, you know, maybe 100 people just orbiting the moon. I'm not sure I want to be on that flight, but it is very intriguing.
I'm expecting you to be on that flight calling into us live.
Right. Yeah. I was jokingly talking about that with my wife before the show, and I'm not sure I would get permission, but you got to really give hats off again to the crew, like Inspiration 4, who just orbited for 3 days in the Dragon capsule. And, you know, just these are unbelievable feats that are happening so quickly right under our nose.
Absolutely. Well, I want you to speculate on a couple things here. One, we send astronauts to Mars, and they just land in a general area. What do you expect them to find?
Well, you know, the movie The Martian that was released, you know, somewhat recently.
With Matt, was that the one with Matt Damon?
Yeah, the Matt Damon specialty there.
Okay, sure.
You know, NASA released a bunch of data around the release of the film saying discovery of water on Mars, ancient saltwater found, flowing rivers. And what's really interesting is this is actually repurposed from like 10 years ago that they released this, because we've been watching and waiting for some type of announcement. So I think what most likely is going to be the showstopper, George, is there's a couple of signs that we've had over the years now about life on Mars. Now, even since, you know, the angle that we can look at from more the ufological or conspiracy lens, there's talk that the Russians landed on Mars in the 60s. There was a video called Alternative 3. You might remember that.
What, you mean with cosmonauts?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
Why did they keep it quiet? Did something happen?
That's the thing, is we can't prove it. We don't know for sure. There was a video released out of the UK called Alternative 3. It's very, very hard to find a copy. And it just postulates, just theorizes, and shows footage, not real footage, of Russians landing on Mars in the 60s. And the first thing that happens as they're landing, they see something sort of scurrying away from the craft, something like burrowing into the ground.
Like an animal of some sort?
Like an animal, exactly. So that's where I'm going to put my bet, George, is that wherever they do land, if we're actually talking about feet on the ground, humans, they're going to go out and start lifting over rocks and looking at things, and most likely we're going to see that there's living things on the surface, plant life, and possibly animals. I mean, we've seen the methane being released into the atmosphere, that there's some type of decaying enough to register on our radar that there's a methane process happening on Earth and being trapped by the atmosphere. So, yeah, I want to see some little critters on Mars and pick some Mars flowers and lay on some Mars grass. Now, that sounds weird, but if you look at the Mars Global Surveyor photos, that's what we see.
Well, Sir Charles Schulz III, who comes on the program quite a bit, tells us about these incredible fossils that are on Mars. And I guess they would find those too, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I have a strong belief that if we are to be there with actual people and not just, you know, satellite images, we're going to find a deeper, richer history to Mars. And most likely, they might not just be digging up fossils of animals, but ancient remains of humans.
All right, Jason, when we come back, I want to ask you what would happen if we land by Cydonia. What do you think we'll see? We'll be back in a moment. Jason Martell on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Jason Martell with us. We're going to take calls with Jason next hour. We're talking about going to Mars. Jason, you so eloquently answered what happens if we just landed in certain areas of Mars. What happens, in your opinion, what do we see if we go to Cydonia? And the astronauts are looking up at this huge structure. They probably can't tell what it is from the ground level, but from above, of course, you can. But what do you think they see out there?
You know, there was a movie they did about, I think, 15 years ago now called Mission to Mars, where they actually, like, roll up to the face and hit it with some radar, and then dust blows off it from the vibrations, and it's this crystalline, huge alien face, you know. I don't really know what's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be that illustrious. But I do think that when we actually visit Cydonia, there's going to be some key markers that are going to make us realize there has to be some type of Mars-Earth connection. Even from where we sit here looking at Mars, we've been able to identify that in that Cydonia region, the pyramidal structures, the D&M pyramid, the face, everything seems to have a very strong connection to Egypt. So what I find interesting, George, is that even on our own planet, we can't even figure out what the pyramids were used for deep in the past. But you know, looking at, again, through the technological lens, the pyramids were some type of energy device. We know that there must have been some type of ancient world energy grid that shared some type of subtle energy or some type of energy that we don't understand. I bet this extended off planet and might even been a network that was connected to Cydonia. So maybe we'll find some advanced technologies or things that can, you know, further push the envelope of understanding what we have here on Earth, things that we might have found in Egypt that they just haven't made public. Maybe those will be some opportunities to finally surface them when we set foot on Mars.
Well, in Egypt as well, Cairo means Mars. I find that to be fascinating, don't you?
Yeah, that is actually quite interesting, you know, and when we look into the history books, there's lots of mentions of Mars. Even in some of the ancient Sumerian writings, they speak of exiling a god on Mars. And actually, Sitchin went to great lengths to say that the face was actually carved out of one of these ancient Anunnaki. So it's a really deep question for us to answer, sitting thousands of miles away and trying to answer it. So I think, George, when we actually visit Cydonia with people there, the tools that we'll have capable, meaning if you asked me, like if I was one of the fortunate people to be on the mission, and you know, I do have a proposal that I've been trying to get in front of Elon Musk around advanced archaeology off planet Earth. He wants us to go to Mars. Guess what? We've already been there. I think if I was to go to Mars, I would want to equip myself with the right tools, just like we have here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd probably take a couple DJI drones, you know, equipped with some advanced radar, that sort of thing, being able to, you know, look for subtle energy and understand, like, where these things are emanating from. So a lot of the practices that we've put up to explore ancient sites here, I think would also apply to expeditions on Mars.
Let's assume for a moment, Jason, that Mars was loaded with a civilization much like ours now. What do you think happened to that planet? If it had an atmosphere, if it had greenery, if it had oceans, something tragic happened there. What do you think it was?
Well, I'm going to speculate, George, and you know the research that we've been doing through, rest his soul, Dr. Tom Van Flandren,
mm-hmm.
Heard that name in a while.
Miss him.
His exploded planet hypothesis. Many others, you know, Sitchin looking at the Planet X model, which we can probably touch on later. There's lots of evidence to show that our solar system's been bombarded, even our own planet, you know, dinosaurs and such, Yucatan crater. We've been bombarded by, you know, events happening for quite a long time. And so Mars is no different. Most likely, they were subjected to some type of a large blast that just rocked their planet's atmosphere, probably in a very quick manner, which, you know, is a little alarming. I don't think we're really going to know those answers, though, until we have a better understanding of our current solar system dynamics. And that's, you know, still into question as to how we look at our static model of just one sun. Is that really the case? So,
is it conceivable, if they had high technology, and that is spaceships, that they knew something was headed their way because of science, and they all got in these craft and came to Earth?
Well, now you're getting into some fun angles there of, again, the Mars-Earth connection. Yeah, I think, you know, when we look at Cydonia, we're not talking about something that was built, you know, 1,000 years ago or even 10,000 years ago. Comparing it to what we have in Egypt, Egypt wasn't most likely, as far as the pyramid, Sphinx, they weren't built 2,500 BC. These were structures built more like 10,000, 15,000 BC. So looking at Cydonia, these probably go back hundreds of thousands of years, you know, as far as a timeline scale. And so that's, I think, going to open up a much deeper view of our history than we currently have access to.
I think the asteroid belt might either be one of two things, either a planet that might have collided with Mars and blew up, or it's a series of what could have been a planet that just never formed, and the only thing that formed were these rocks that turned out to be asteroids. What do you think?
Well, yeah, that's pretty much the current science, and a little bit of stitching sprinkled in there is, you know, the model shows us that, and here's the UFO angle on it too, is we've heard the phrase MJ-12. Well, it turns out that MJ-12 could also stand for Mars-Jupiter 12th planet, because right in between Mars and Jupiter, where the asteroid belt is, there's enough room for a much larger body, 4 to 8 times the size of Earth, to be freely passing in that area where the asteroid belt is. So, yeah, most likely there was some large collision. If you look at the accounts from Sitchin and the Atrahasis and the, you know, the epics of creation from Sumerian lands, he basically is saying that Nibiru, an external planet, smacked our primitive Earth. That wasn't even called Earth then. It was called Tiamat. But Earth was literally in a collision with one of the moons of this other planet. You know, this large planet comes by and it has debris, and one of the moons smacked our Earth so hard that it whacked it into half a planet, moved it into its new position, and that's what strewed out this debris, the hammered out bracelet, as the Bible calls it, into our current asteroid belt. You'd think that they'd be looking into this more and want to, you know, verify our celestial origins, but yeah. No, even these questions are left to us as ufologists and others to really question our history of what's written in the text, to say, no, it's not a mythological tale, folks. It's actual hard science.
Jason, explain for us what precession is and its effects on us.
You know, Sitchin did a really good job of explaining that our solar system can have external influences, like a planet X. And ever since then, the idea of a Nibiru and these topics have really sparked the public's interest. When I started to look into these topics, I was fascinated, and it led me on a journey of looking into our past. It turns out that all of the current sciences that we have line up with data that's been coming out of ancient cultures for thousands of years, and we just weren't ready to hear it. One of the biggest changes is the fact and understanding that our solar system most likely isn't static, and it's not just one sun. We're probably orbiting another sun. And so if you can take a mental shift, and we can talk about this more, but if you can take a mental shift to say that our sun is in orbit around another body, a binary solar system is what it's called, more than one sun. If our sun is orbiting another solar system, probably Sirius A and B, that means that all of us, like the Earth, the Jupiter, Mars, all of these planets spinning around the sun, we're actually in motion constantly. If our sun is orbiting another body, we're going along for the ride. And so that changes how we see the view of the heavens. And so up until now, modern astronomers have been calculating something that all the ancients were aware of called precession. And they're like, wow, there's this 24,000-year advanced cycle that somehow the ancients broke it down into a really cool calendar called the 12 houses of the zodiac, where we go through a 2,000-year cycle and the North Star switches to a different constellation. But it's a huge cycle, George, and somehow they mapped it, and it does seem to affect the rise and fall of civilizations here on Earth, and we can talk about some of that breakdown so that people can understand it more.
And there's also talk, Jason, that there might have been some kind of nuclear holocaust on Mars. What do you think of that possibility?
Well, yeah, going back to the Mars piece there for a sec, I would say that that probably has some resonance of truth to it. There's enough evidence here on Earth to look at our ancient sites and say, well, where did they go? Or why did these technologies stop? Even Sitchin commented that the Sinai Peninsula, he asked scientists, well, why is it all covered in like heated glass? Why are these sands heated to the point that they look like they've been vitrified, made into glass? He said, well, we don't know. It looks like there's probably volcanoes or something. There's no volcanoes in the Sinai Peninsula. But there were ancient wars. They actually talk about detonating huge weapons. So if those civilizations were happening here on Earth 10,000, 15,000 years ago, I can only imagine the connection of what might have been taking place on Cydonia, either, you know, another land grab of ownership and dominance, or who knows? But the wars in the heavens didn't just happen in the skies of Earth. They probably extended into the solar system as well.
Where would Jason Martell, his website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. You also can see him quite frequently on the History Channel's Ancient Aliens. His book is Knowledge Apocalypse. And there are some people who believe in the different theories about Mars and the different theories about planet Earth. And in your opinion, some people believe that there are humans on Mars right now, Jason, underground in caverns by the tunes of millions. I find that hard to believe. How about you?
Well, you know, we've been talking about these topics for so long that, you know, I've tried to keep myself grounded in science and things that we can prove. So there are a lot of people in our spectrum of the field that say that they've been transported to Mars. They were in the military and were privately, you know, using some doorway in L.A. and whoop, they were there in 3 minutes, like a Stargate. I am very positive that there's a lot of technologies. I love the show Stargate and Cheyenne Mountains Complex.
Oh, yeah.
Most likely, I think probably all that, it does exist. But do we have access to it? Or is it going to be something that I can help push forward through the public lens? No. Right? So we have to, you know, utilize technologies and things that are going to be accessible to the general public. And that's kind of, I think, our best bet is to highlight those avenues first.
If we go to Mars in 2026 or 2030s, how long do you think those astronauts will stay on Mars initially?
It's a permanent settlement, George. So the game plan, from what I've researched, is that SpaceX plans to, you know, start a presence on the moon, and then with that, having a permanent setup there, use that as a way station to funnel supplies and do things also to Mars. And then once you have the moon base set up as well as transport to Mars set up, then you can start to bring in the heavy payloads, the heavier starships to bring in, you know, different things that you would need. But I think this would probably be more of a ground up, meaning once you're there on Mars, the raw materials that you need to build things, to set up a foundation, it's all pretty much already there, you know, on the planet.
Are they going to revolve the astronauts, or are they going to, once you're there, you stay there?
Yeah, that's the, in reading some of this stuff, like, you know, they're being very forward with this. People are going to die on their way to Mars. People are going to die when they first land on
Mars. You mean naturally die? They're going to die of heart attacks or whatever happens, right?
They're going to die from stuff that happens as pioneers going.
Well, that's true, but they could die naturally too, just because of the time, you know?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that they're being very clear and upfront that this isn't a mission of joy. This is pushing the envelope forward, and people will make sacrifices, but they will be living there as a permanent settlement. And, you know, your point, not only will they be dying, but maybe also giving birth.
The late science fiction writer Jerry Purnell, who has passed on, told me a story once. His editor and my editor were the same when we were publishing books and writing books. And he said that in an effort to beat the Soviet Union to the moon, which we did, that in an effort to beat them, had we not done the Apollo program that we did, that they planned on sending an astronaut to the moon. He was going to live in a capsule or some kind of hut type thing, and they were going to drop supplies to him, but it was a one-way mission. Had you ever heard that story?
I haven't, but it makes me wonder.
To beat the Russians, they would have sent a person to the moon, dumped him there, and he would have lived there for the rest of his life.
Oh, my God. Well, it does make me wonder, again, looking at it from you know, our lens of understanding, that the moon is probably already occupied, and that when they first landed there, some of the quotes are, why are you sending us here in tricycles when the military is already here in Ferraris? So I would wonder, too, that even if they had that plan, were they quickly to be like, oh, man, that's not going to work. He's quickly going to have a problem with the people two blocks down on the dark side that are going to constantly come over and tell him to leave.
Let's take calls next hour with Jason Martell, so jump on board. We will be back in a moment. Jason Martell's website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're talking about going to Mars. Join us. We'll be back.